This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, May 27th, 2021, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. On our program this afternoon, a legal challenge to a bill passed by the Arkansas General Assembly disallowing gender-affirming medical care to minors. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports. Our second half hour includes four artists about to present an original work of dance based on memories of Mount Sequoia, transforming recollection to dance later this hour. And after our hour, on Here and Now from NPR, after George Floyd's murder last year, Ithaca, New York transformed its police force into a public safety department with unarmed officers. Plus, what Egypt gained when it brokered a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Here and Now begins this afternoon at 1. The Arkansas Department of Health counts 183 new cases of and three additional deaths from COVID-19 in the most recent testing period. Hospitalizations dropped by 11 in the last 24 hours. Active cases in Arkansas now number 1,975. That's 15 fewer than this time yesterday. The family of former Senator J. William Fulbright asking the University of Arkansas to not remove a statue of him from the Fayetteville campus. Fulbright's legacy is being reconsidered given his record supporting segregation and opposing civil rights in the 1950s and 1960s. The Arkansas Democrat-Gazette reports 34 members of Fulbright's family sent a letter to the U of A Board of Trustees defending the senator as an honorable man, great statesman, and visionary educator. Last month, a university committee recommended removing his statue outside the old main building and that his name be removed from the university's Arts and Sciences College. No action has been taken yet at this point. The Best Friends Animal Society in Bentonville is a milestone closer to a new facility. The national organization hosted a groundbreaking yesterday on a new Best Friends Pet Resource Center on 8th Street in Gateway Park. The finished structure will have about 20,000 square feet on 6 acres. The group is dedicated to the end of killing pets in the country's shelters by 2025. A press release states the finished building in Bentonville will serve an estimated 13,000 dogs and cats per year. The Arkansas Razorback baseball team will play in the third round of the SEC tournament tonight after defeating Georgia 11-2 in Hoover, Alabama yesterday. Arkansas faces Vanderbilt tonight for a scheduled 8 o'clock first pitch. A flood warning remains in effect until just after 9 o'clock tonight for the Poteau River near Panama, Oklahoma. At mid-morning, the river was about 2.5 feet above flood stage. Minor flooding still occurring. And there is a 100% chance of rain or thunderstorms tonight in northwest Arkansas, a 90% chance in the Arkansas River Valley. Between 3/4 and 1 inch of rain could fall before daylight tomorrow. Lows tonight between 59 and 67. 20% chance of rain early tomorrow, then partly cloudy tomorrow afternoon. Highs from 73 to 81. Partly cloudy Friday night with lows from 49 to 56. Saturday forecast includes sunshine and highs from 72 to 78. This is Ozarks at Large. The ACLU of Arkansas is filing a lawsuit to block a new state law scheduled to go into effect this summer. It's a law that bans gender-affirming medical care to Arkansas trans youth. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
The law, known as the SAFE Act, prohibits healthcare professionals from providing gender-affirming medical treatment to youth under age 18, bans physicians from referring trans patients to other physicians, including those practicing out of state, and bars any state funds or insurance coverage for such care. The law also enables private insurance providers to refuse gender-affirming medical coverage to any trans Arkansans. On Tuesday, Holly Dixon, executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Arkansas, filed suit in federal district court for the Eastern District of Arkansas in Little Rock. The case is assigned to Judge Jay Moody.
We have 4 plaintiff families and young people and 2 physicians, and they seek to ensure that this law never goes into effect.
The defendants in the case are State Attorney General Leslie Rutledge and the Arkansas Medical Board, who will be responsible for enforcing the law. Dixon says she's joined by an array of attorneys.
Yes, there are ACLU National LGBTQ Project attorneys involved, Chase Strangio and Leslie Cooper, as well as the law firm of Sullivan & Cromwell, the law firm in Little Rock, Gil Reagan Owen, and the Wallace Law Firm, and of course, the ACLU of Arkansas.
The plaintiffs include two transgender girls and two transgender boys, six parents and two physicians, who claim that the SAFE Act violates the U.S. Constitution. Dixon says as soon as House Bill 1570 was enacted as the SAFE Act, she began to receive calls from worried families.
Families knew immediately what this bill would mean for them, and so we heard from many families, and that's been a common question. Do you have plaintiffs? Have you heard from families? Yes. We've heard from so many families that we can't represent them all, or we would bury ourselves in paperwork when we need to hurry and get an order from the court. So what's at stake here are the lives of their children.
With parental consent under specialist physician care, trans youth are prescribed hormone treatment therapy starting at puberty to match their gender identity. Transgender surgical interventions are recommended only for adults, not children seeking such change. In response to the ACLU's lawsuit, SAFE Act sponsor, State Representative Robin Lundstrom, Republican Elm Springs, issued a statement claiming the state aims to protect, quote, children from chemical and surgical castration. Dixon says if the law is allowed to go into effect, it will devastate the lives of transgender youth and families in Arkansas, forcing many to move out of state in order to obtain gender-affirming medical care. In her press release, she cites major medical associations across the U.S. that support trans-affirming medical treatment for trans youth who want it. And without it, those experts say, youth crippled by gender dysphoria may suffer debilitating mental distress or be at risk for suicide. Unless blocked by the court, the new law will go into effect July 28th. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
We've posted a link to the ACLU's complaint challenging the SAFE Act on OzarksAtLarge.com. Meanwhile, the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU of Arkansas, and Planned Parenthood Federation of America also filed a lawsuit yesterday challenging Arkansas's ban on abortion as unconstitutional. Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson signed Senate Bill 6 into law in mid-March. It's considered to be among the nation's most restrictive abortion bans. Scheduled to take effect July 28th, the law prohibits abortion in nearly every case except to save the life or preserve the health of the fetus or mother, and it imposes felony criminal penalties on doctors, including fines of up to $100,000 and or prison sentences. The Arkansas law also bans abortion in the case of rape or incest, a line that's historically drawn even by anti-abortion rights activists and lawmakers in the past. Arkansas's abortion ban is among 20 abortion restrictions passed by the Arkansas General Assembly in 2021. That rivals the state of Louisiana's record that was set in 1978. Nationally, in 2021, anti-abortion politicians introduced over 530 abortion restriction proposals. The ACLU says the case comes at a pivotal time for reproductive rights in America, with the Supreme Court poised to hear a challenge to a Mississippi law that bans abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Arkansas anti-abortion supporters have been pressing for the court to revisit the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision sanctioning such procedures. In a press release, Holly Dixon with ACLU of Arkansas said by outlawing abortion and criminalizing doctors, politicians in Arkansas are now in charge of women's most deeply held personal decisions. This is Ozarks at Large. If you are partially or fully vaccinated, you possess one of those slightly larger than wallet-sized vaccination cards. Or you did, and maybe you can't find yours right now. Is this a problem? How should we and where should we keep the cards? To answer these questions, our new correspondent, Matthew Moore, sought out experts.
In February of 2021, I received my second dose of the Pfizer vaccine at Medical Arts Pharmacy in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Somewhere between the pharmacy and my front door, I lost my vaccine card. To my relief, Julie Stewart says I'm not alone.
You're definitely not the only person this has happened to. We've had people, particularly coming back for their second shot, that have lost it between the first and second dose.
Stewart is a pharmacist at Medical Arts Pharmacy, and she comes bearing good news.
So I think best case scenario is to go to the location you got your vaccination and request that they provide you with a new card, just because they have an easy way of looking up all the information that needs to go on the card.
That information includes whether you received the Pfizer, Moderna, or Johnson & Johnson vaccine, as well as the lot number, which indicates more specifically which vaccine you received. But what if you didn't get your vaccine at a pharmacy? Many people got their shots through local events, like the ones held at the NWA Mall in Fayetteville or in Razorback Stadium.
Any doctor's office or the Department of Health could, at the very least, provide an official immunization record, which would show that they had received both doses of the COVID-19 vaccination.
Perhaps you're more responsible, and you have clung tightly to that card. But the card is an inconvenient size. It doesn't really fit in most wallets, and it feels sacrilegious to fold it up. Some folks have laminated their cards to protect them, but Stewart says that may not necessarily be the best option right now.
The latest we've heard is, well, what if there's a booster required and you need to have a slot for that extra dose?
Stewart says if that happens, pharmacies will probably provide a new card and properly dispose of the laminated one. If you're looking for a suggestion on how to store it for safekeeping, Stewart says you could try using a card protector instead. As of right now in Arkansas, there are no private businesses requiring proof of vaccination to enter stores. There's been rumors that it may become a requirement for flying, especially internationally. But that's not the case yet here, according to Alex English, the spokesperson for Northwest Arkansas National Airport.
So I actually can answer this question from personal experience. I flew twice last week. You know, I departed and arrived at XNA. Flew through Houston to Cancun International and then the same route back. Not once was I asked for any type of vaccination record or card. So, you know, I obviously flew through one airline, so that's their policy, but I have not heard of any requirements of that happening.
English says while she didn't need her vaccine card, she was required to test negative for COVID-19 upon returning to American soil. A negative test is required regardless of vaccination status, and it is the traveler's responsibility to come back prepared with their results.
There's still a need for quite a few people to have access to the vaccine. You know, there's still a lot of that getting worked out, so that's not necessarily required, or it doesn't trump getting the negative test back quite yet. I brought my vaccine card. I made copies of it. I always encourage people to make copies of everything, your passport, your vaccine cards, anything that you have on you. It's always a good idea to make a copy to have, you know, in a separate place from your originals when you're traveling. But I never once had to show my vax card, but I still did have to have that negative COVID test to get back into the United States.
When it comes to future protocols on requiring vaccinations to fly, English says a lot of things are still in flux and uncertain for airports.
You know, there's a lot of speculation on this, and I've heard both sides of the story and, you know, both points of views. I don't see that really becoming a requirement in the near future. But, you know, that's the thing with COVID. You just never know what's down the pipeline. It's something that we have never dealt with before, and especially in an industry like aviation, where travel is so readily available, unlike it ever has been in the past.
Julie Stewart, the pharmacist from Medical Arts, says that her son is attending a private college in the fall. His institution is requiring the COVID-19 vaccine for students who plan on living on campus and attending class in person.
You can choose not to get it and do virtual classes and live off campus, but they do require it for the in-person classes.
Let's recap. If you've lost your card, contact the pharmacy that supplied your shots or your doctor's office to get a replacement card. If you want to store your card safely, maybe hold off on getting it laminated just yet. Instead, get a card protector or store it somewhere secure. And if you're planning on flying internationally, make sure to have your negative test results for COVID-19 when you get back to the U.S. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Matthew Moore.
And Matthew Moore will return to Ozarks at Large tomorrow with another story, this one marking the year since the murder of George Floyd. Also on tomorrow's Ozarks, Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics helps us better understand the week's news. And Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis invites Claire Starr into the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio to perform new songs. News, music, and much more on Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF. And also by asking your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large. Today, national, state, and local leaders gathered in Bentonville for the inaugural Safe Roads Summit. The event, hosted by Arkansas Good Roads Foundation, features comments from national bike advocates like Rachel Maney, the National Director of Bike Law, and Joe Quinn, the Executive Director of the Arkansas Good Roads Foundation. Topics on the agenda today included bike safety and bike law. Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskins Jr. and Deputy Chief Brian Warner are establishing 2 hours per month of paid mental wellness leave for Cherokee Nation employees. The two signed an executive order earlier this week that started the policy. The mental wellness leave can be used at employees' discretion each month. It's intended to provide opportunities for personal growth outside of the workplace. The order went into effect upon the signing of the executive order on Tuesday. And the Bella Vista Library is back to 100% capacity and will even relaunch summer programs next month. The summer reading program kicks off Monday, June 14th, with the program Science with Mr. Jeff. And all summer long, there will be programs dedicated to animals and stories. You can find out more at bvpl.org.
It's time for today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. I'm Paul Gatling. We had an earnings call earlier this week for one of the region's public companies, and it was a strong one. America's Car Mart, the buy here, pay here used car dealer headquartered in Rogers, reported fiscal fourth quarter profit of $43.5 million. That's for the period ending April 30th. That's only a 376% increase from the fourth quarter of a year ago. For the fiscal year that also ended in April, Car Mart posted total annual revenues of $918 million. That is up compared to $744 million a year ago. Over the past 52 weeks, Car-Mart shares are up 36%. For a deeper dive into the numbers, Kim Souza has additional reporting, and you can find that on our website at nwabusinessjournal.com. Still to come on today's show, we will hear from Arkansas Democrat Gazette senior editor Rex Nelson, plus a look at recent sales tax collections in Northwest Arkansas. That and more after the break on today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. For more than 70 years, Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield has used its knowledge and compassion to create healthcare solutions for individuals and businesses. More information at ArkansasBlueCross.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Rex Nelson is a senior editor for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette in Little Rock, writing about politics, food, economic development, and the people and places of Arkansas. Those travels took Nelson to Northwest Arkansas recently. In a conversation with Roby Brock, Nelson discusses getting back out on the road in the state following the pandemic and some of his recent political commentary.
You've been traveling around the state quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I guess you're spending all your stimulus money at all these restaurants that you didn't get to go to for the last few months. Is that what you're doing to get around, just spending all your money on places you couldn't go?
I'm not spending all my money, but I'm catching up on lost time. I mean, it... I basically shut down my Arkansas travels for 14 months, so it's good to be back on the road. This past week, I spent 3 days in Bentonville. And, you know, when you don't live with it every day, it's amazing. It had been about 18 months since I had been there. The construction, I mean, it's you know this, but it's just a different world. I was totally amazed in just the year and a half since I'd spent some serious time there. That's what's happened.
I mean, I'm up there a lot, and I can, from 1 week to the next, and I can go, where did that building come from? Wasn't that a cow pasture at one point? You know, stuff like that.
I mean, you look at the footprint, for instance, of that new Walmart home campus. And it's just, you realize how big that is going to be. That obviously is going to be unlike anything this state has ever seen.
Let's talk some politics. I'm going to begin with a series of blistering columns that you have written lately about the state of the Republican Party, especially in Arkansas. One was called Pity the Governor. The other was called Cowards and Clowns. I'm going to quote you from a couple of them here. You say that some of the legislators are like that guy we know back home, the loudmouth who shows up at the coffee shop early each morning and bores everyone with his views. In this case, we're letting those people run things. Did you get a lot of attaboys from these columns, or did you get a lot of screw you from these columns?
Some of both, you know, I worked, Roby, in my first Republican campaign full-time in 1984. There were so few identifiable Republicans in 1984 in the state of Arkansas. We all knew each other on a first-name basis. And I felt strongly then, and I feel strongly now, that one-party dominance is not good for the state of Arkansas. So Republicans, beginning with that 2010 election cycle over the past decade, gained solid majorities. It becomes a solidly red state. But in the process, what happened? I think we've created a Frankenstein's monster now by doing that.
In what way? Do you think the policy goes too far? Do you think there's not enough focus on the state issues that should be there? Are we too nationalized?
Absolutely. I don't really consider many of these members to be true Republicans, people who believe in a more fair tax code, people who believe in efficient government, getting the most out of your government employees. Instead, what they are doing is they are taking cookie-cutter legislation. Let's call it what it is. It's stuff that's being introduced in every state by far right-wing groups who are doing it for fundraising purposes. I've raised political money. You've raised political money. You know you need a bad guy. You need a boogeyman. So basically, these groups are scared people to raise funds, and one of their things is to get legislators back in individual states to introduce these things, whether they're transgender rights, whether they're voting rights. All of these things we saw introduced were things you were seeing all across the country. It really had nothing to do with good government in Arkansas. We wasted a lot of time in this session when we should have been focused again on good government, efficient government.
Do you not think that some legislators, though, truly believe that they're doing the right thing?
I think a few truly believe. Those are the groups that I call the know-nothings. But I think a lot of them are into the groups that I call the cowards. They know better. They know this is not good for the state of Arkansas. But they're so afraid of those loudmouths back in their district, who I don't think is the majority, that they are cowards. They will not stand up to people in their own party. We've got to change that. Hopefully we hit rock bottom this year and we begin on the way back up in the next session. I know I've talked to a number of business leaders across the state. They realize how bad this was for economic development in Arkansas, and I think you'll see some of these people have strong opponents in their own Republican primary come the spring of next year.
That is Rex Nelson, senior editor of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. He appeared on a recent episode of Talk Business and Politics with Roby Brock. And you can watch that full conversation on our sister website at talkbusiness.net. And just a quick reminder, you can watch our television show, Talk Business and Politics, each Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. on KFSM Channel 5. In other news this week, in this month's sales tax report, revenue was up 32.6% in Bentonville, Fayetteville, Rogers, and Springdale. The cumulative sales tax revenue totaled $8.25 million. That is up compared to $6.2 million in the year-ago period. Revenue was also 40% higher than the previous month's report. The May report consists of revenue generated in March from a 1% sales tax that each city collects to help fund their budgets. Sales conducted in March are remitted by the cities to the state in April and then reported in May as revenue. Ohio-based Preformed Line Products is seeking approval to expand its manufacturing plant in Rogers. The company filed a large-scale development plan with city planners indicating a 25% addition to the facility on South First Street, which now stands at approximately 325,000 square feet. And the 230,000 square foot mixed-use building under construction in downtown Bentonville called Ledger hit a milestone when it topped out Tuesday. Topping out is symbolic of when the uppermost steel beam is put in place. The six-story office building's exterior design is unique in that it will incorporate a 3,900 linear foot bikeable and walkable path. The zigzag switchback pattern will provide direct outdoor entry on every floor with terraces that allow for open air access. Construction will continue throughout the year on South Main Street with the opening scheduled for early 2022. You can find all those stories and more at nwabusinessjournal.com, where you can follow our reporting each and every day. I'm Paul Gatling, and that's the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, thanks for listening.
The 11th annual Million Meals campaign, sponsored by Arvest Bank in Northwest Arkansas, is nearing completion. It began in early April with the goal of raising money that would translate into food to help families in the region who are having to deal with food insecurity. The campaign promises that every dollar raised equals five meals. Arvest is working with more than two dozen organizations in Northwest Arkansas and the Arkansas River Valley, including food banks, who work with food insecurity and hunger issues. Arkansas and Oklahoma are both among the states with the highest rate of food insecurity. The campaign ends at the close of business Saturday, and the monetary donations will be accepted at open branch lobbies and drive-thrus or through the bank's mobile app through the end of business Saturday. The 17th annual War Eagle Appreciation Day is scheduled for June 5th. This day includes efforts to clean up waterways in Northwest Arkansas. Volunteers are requested to help clean up two stretches along War Eagle Creek. Volunteers will receive goodie bags, and there will be limited free shuttle service for experienced boaters who sign up. It is BYOB, bring your own boat. If interested, you can send an email to info@beaverwatershedalliance.org. That's info@beaverwatershedalliance.org. Now, it's not as much water, or at least it's not as deep as War Eagle Creek, but the splash pad at Lawrence Plaza in downtown Bentonville is scheduled to open this weekend. First day, Saturday, and the splash pad will be open from 9 a.m. until 10 p.m. daily. More information can be found at the City of Bentonville's website. And the program schedule is in full swing at Lake Dardanelle State Park in Russellville. Launching early next month is the park's Citizen Science Summer Reading Series. Thursday, June 5th, the series will feature a librarian from the Pope County Library System and a park interpreter with a program about butterflies. It's an all-ages event. Families are encouraged to bring blankets or chairs for the outdoor story. A full schedule of area state parks events can be found at arkansasstateparks.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from Bob's Red Mill Natural Foods, makers of simple breakfast cereals including high-fiber Old Country-style muesli, made with whole grains, nuts, seeds, and fruit. Online at bobsredmill.com and available at Walmart.
This is Ozarks at Large. Earlier this month, we drove up to Mount Sequoia in Fayetteville and met four artists connected to Body Sonnet, a collective of contemporary dance makers and performers. They've been on Mount Sequoia this month to create a new performance inspired by the very place where they're creating.
We are Body Sonnet, currently in residence at Mount Sequoia. Our residency is called New Movement at Mount Sequoia, and we are so happy and excited to be here as a collective of contemporary dance makers making work in unconventional spaces.
That's Marceline Park Harrison, the director of Body Sonnet and a resident of Western Massachusetts when she's not in residency at Mount Sequoia. We met her, as well as Fayetteville native and current project co-director Caroline Sharkey, and dancers Blake Worthy of Memphis and Elias Rosa of New Jersey. When we met, the company was just in the third day of creating a new performance, one that's inspired by actual memories people have of Mount Sequoia. Caroline Sharkey, the Fayetteville native, says the inspiration for the performance come from public questions asked about memory.
Like, what is a bittersweet memory? What was the warmest day you remember? What is... what's a story you tell often, and having conversations with these people. So I spoke to my own grandmother, who had a house. Both my grandmother and my mother lived on a house off of Mount Sequoia. I spoke with some members of the board of Mount Sequoia. I spoke with Justin Cunningham, who grew up in Northwest Arkansas. I spoke with Pablo, who I cannot pronounce his last name correctly, so I'm not going to attempt to in honor of that, who is a theater director who moved to Arkansas from Madrid. So lots of different people with different relationships to the land, which is kind of what we wanted, to just have as much diversity in memories and thoughts and experiences as possible.
The finished work will be presented Saturday and Sunday evenings at Mount Sequoia at Vesper Point. That's the spot with the outdoor rock altar and pews. The memories collected are being transformed to movement. Park Harrison says that transformation takes place in a way that is natural and organic.
All of us house a lot of information and memories in our own bodies, and we were talking as we were beginning to create movement about our relationship to words and the literal versus our own innate ability and want to be abstract in our bodies, in our movement, in our own memories as well. What this looks like in the room is we've listened a little bit to some of the interviews and just taken some takeaways, some key phrases, and used those to create our own movement. And then we also have done some of our own exercises where we write down all the things we can remember, and we also infuse them with a few lies.
Those few lies seem to harmonize with the concept of memory anyway. We've all been surprised how a friend or a loved one remembers an event differently than we do. Memories over time can become comfortable lies for us. Dancers Elias Rosa and Blake Worthy say that the blurred boundary between truth and lies in memory is universal and really inspirational for the creation of this specific work. We hear from Elias first, then Blake.
We all experience memory. We are all... part of us are mental people, and we share a corporeal kind of history. So it's like taking the truths of the words that are from the interviews of these people in this land, and then I sometimes think it's like saying it to yourself, and then adding your own lie to, so it could become your truth, kind of thing. Like, so, yeah, that's how I'm viewing it right now.
A big difference between, I'm realizing throughout this project, specifically in this project, not in like the universe, a big difference between a lie and the truth is context. So what's true for Moslin may not be true for me today. It might be true for me tomorrow, though. And so like there's this kind of like fluctuating space we're all in.
Blake Worthy uses an interesting verb when talking about the process of shaping this new work: play. And he says for at least the first few days during this residency, he was playing with a concept that coincides often with memory and often confuses truth and lies: nostalgia.
And a lot of times, nostalgia, you have a nostalgia for something that was never yours. Like the land, for example. You have this, like, you don't own the land. You will be a part of it one day. And so to have nostalgia for a kind of land that you never had is always something really interesting. This idea for me of dancing, the memory living in the body, has produced a really clear kind of dance language for us. And so it's been really smooth going from concept to like an embodied practice.
There's also a technical professional form of memory that's required of almost any performance. The ability to remember the lyrics of a song, the text of a script, or the recall, physical and mental, required for dance. A community-integrated performance like this one needs at least a short-term memory to accurately bring the rehearsed movements to the performance this weekend. Park Harrison and Sharkey say the creative process for this new work is using some traditional and not as traditional methods of memory.
We're working a lot with repetition and creating small little worlds of movement that then can evolve with the different individuals' input and their own physicality. And I think that also goes along with like this idea of memory as a form, memory as habit. We talked about a lot as we were beginning to conceptualize this, and utilizing both our common sort of past in dance training or dance experiences or our own tastes, and then also our current individual approaches to that as a way to create these little systems and celebrate individuality, collaboration, collectivism. Within our work.
Yeah, and also we've been working with, because, you know, we've been listening to all these interviews, it felt very natural for text and voice to be involved, more theatrical, like speaking. People are definitely not used to dance or speaking, but we do, believe it or not. And so part of it has actually been creating things to say as well to move with. So that's also been interesting because I think it's not something that comes as innate to us. We can very easily put something on in our bodies and let it live there. But actually having words to remember that aren't ours has been really interesting.
Each of the four artists we spoke with say there is a luxury with being able to create a work in the very place that inspired the work. And each says the ability to live, work, and play together practically 24/7 to fine-tune the work is also a huge benefit. But when we talked to them, they had been together just 3 days and only had a couple of weeks to go before this weekend's performances. So just how much could they already know when we talked about what would become the eventual production?
Well, I'm going to say all of it. I think because it's somewhere in our bodies. You know what I'm saying? This piece is a piece of marble that we have to chip away at. This is not a painting that we have to paint. So we do know the piece. We just have to find it in each other and in ourselves.
You can find out how that sculpting of the new work evolved when the new movement at Mount Sequoia Work with original music from Amos Cochran is performed Saturday and Sunday evenings at 7:30 outdoors at Mount Sequoia. More information and ticket information can be found by going to bodysonnet.org and following the appropriate links to tickets for new movement at Mount Sequoia. The work is produced in part by Trillium Salon Series and funded by Artist 360, a program of Mid-American Arts Alliance with support from the Walton Family Foundation. We spoke with Moslyn Park Harrison, Caroline Sharkey, Blake Worthy, and Elias Rosa at Mount Sequoia earlier this month. And while we didn't talk with composer Amos Cochran for the story, we can spend a moment listening to the music he wrote for the soundtrack to the film Door in the Woods. That's Mirrors, composed by Amos Cochran for the soundtrack of the film Door in the Woods. Amos is providing original music that will accompany the new movement at Mount Sequoia performances Saturday and Sunday night. And this is Ozarks at Large.
This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with sound perimeter. Yo-Yo Ma American cellist, born to Chinese parents in Paris, has held a career of excellence, both as a performer and as a citizen artist. Ma, known in the so-called classical music world as a prodigy, started his cello career at the age of 4 and a half. He got his degrees from Juilliard and Harvard and has recorded more than 90 albums and received 18 Grammy Awards. Music and its power to embrace unity was highlighted in a performance of Yo-Yo Ma, violinist Itzhak Perelman, clarinetist Anthony McGill, and pianist Gabriela Montero back in 2009 for the inauguration of President Obama. For the occasion, they performed John Williams' Air and Simple Gifts, an arrangement of Aaron Copland's Variation on a Shaker Melody. Ma has been recently quoted saying, "The shared understanding that culture generates in these divisive times can bind us together as one world and guide us to political and economic decisions that benefit the entire species. We are all cultural beings. Let us explore how culture connects us and can help to shape a better future." Let us allow this excerpt to unite us as we listen. Yo-Yo Ma has used his impressive record and platforms to share a message of harmony across differences. Earlier in his career, this idea took him to cross genres and seek out collaborations outside of the traditional repertoire. One of his most well-known partnerships came to life in the year 2000 when Ma started the Silk Road Ensemble. The Silk Road Ensemble has since featured music and musicians from diverse countries, all historically united by the Silk Road, a trade route used for more than 2,000 years for trade across Europe and Asia. Yo-Yo Ma's career and commitment to a better world continues imprinted in every one of the projects he takes on. In August of 2018, he began the Bach Project, a two-year journey to perform Johann Sebastian Bach's six suites for solo cello in 36 locations around the world. Alongside each concert, Yo-Yo Ma and his team partner with artists and culture makers, cultural and community organizations, and leaders from across sectors to design conversations, collaborations, and performances. These public events and creative experiences are different in every location. They aspire to local relevance and global significance. They demonstrate culture's power to create positive change. They inspire new relationships, connect partners across locations, and ask us all to keep culture at the center of our efforts to build a shared future. What an inspiration and a beautiful example of commitment to using music as a tool for social transformation. We end San Perimeter today with You Couldn't Be Cuter, a 1938 song composed by Jerome Kern, this time a collaboration between Yo-Yo Ma and Diana Krall from 2008. This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter.
You couldn't be cuter. Plus that you couldn't be smarter. Plus that intelligent face, you have a disgraceful charm for me. You couldn't be keener. You look so fresh from the cleaner. You are the little grand slam I'll bring to my family. My will show you an album of me that will bore you to tears, and you'll attract all the relatives we have dodged for years and years. And what will they tell me? Exactly what will they tell me? They'll say you couldn't be nicer, couldn't be sweeter, couldn't be better, couldn't be smoother, couldn't be cuter, baby, than you are.
This is Ozarks at Large. The sixth-ranked Arkansas softball team will host a super regional against number 11 Arizona beginning tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at Bogle Park on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville. The winner of this best of three weekend series will then move on to the College World Series. If you don't have your ticket yet, kind of out of luck. Tickets for the Super Regional sold out earlier this week. The Arkansas track and field teams are in the NCAA West preliminaries in College Station, Texas, beginning today. Both squads captured the SEC championship trophies earlier this month at that very same track. It's the last stop before the NCAA championships in Eugene, Oregon, that begin next month. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals are now 9-9, this after last night's 10-7 loss to San Antonio. Those same two teams meet again tonight at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. And the Arkansas men's golf team will open play in the NCAA championships tomorrow in Arizona. 30 teams will start that competition. Arkansas qualified after finishing second in this month's regional near Nashville. The tournament will last through Wednesday, June 2nd.
Support for KUAF comes from Bob's Red Mill, makers of a variety of whole grain breakfast foods, including organic and gluten-free oatmeal cups, a hot breakfast that can be ready in minutes. More at bobsredmill.com. KUAF is giving away two pairs of tickets to Her Set, Her Sound Music Festival, June 5th from 5 to 11 p.m. at Prairie Street Live in Fayetteville. This event features seven NWA women DJs, dance and entertainment acts, vendors, and more. Winners will be announced tomorrow, May 28th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and information are available at KUAF.com.
The National Weather Service is issuing a flash flood watch for the entire KUAF listening area as multiple rounds of thunderstorms are expected to track across northeast Oklahoma and northwest Arkansas through late tonight. These thunderstorms are expected to create heavy rainfall, and they could train over some areas in the region. That is, just keep producing heavy rain over specific spots, and that could lead to flash floods. The watch from the National Weather Service lasts through the not-specific time frame of late tonight. Tomorrow afternoon on a new Science Friday on KUAF, 50% of American adults are fully vaccinated against COVID-19, but there are still some hesitant to get the shot. What's the best way to convince them? Plus, humans mine some 50 billion tons of sand and gravel every year. Can we make sand more sustainable? Hear more tomorrow on Science Friday from 1 to 3 on KUAF 91.3. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Weddington Woods. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Timothy Dennis produced today's edition of Ozarks at Large. Contributors included Matthew Moore, Jacqueline Froelich, and Leah Uribe. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report with Paul Gatling is produced by Stephanie Brock. It's part of our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can learn more at talkbusiness.net. Additional content for today's show came from KUAR, public radio in Little Rock and Central Arkansas. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. You can find out more about Daryl, including when his new music releases take place, at darylsean.com. He also has a presence on Facebook and Instagram. And you can always find the most recent edition of Ozarks at Large at ozarksatlarge.com. Or if you prefer to listen on your own schedule whenever you want, you can subscribe to the free Ozarks at Large podcast. It's available at KUAF.com. You can also subscribe through all the major podcast distributors. And you can have us send you the show basically to your email inbox every Monday through Friday. The free Ozarks at Large KUAF email newsletter. It's free to sign up. Just go to KUAF.com. Every Monday through Friday afternoon, you receive that email newsletter. It will tell you what was on the show that day, plus some other information, and it provides links directly to all those stories, interviews, and features that were on that day's show. Sign up for free at KUAF.com. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for being with us. Stay safe tonight. And we'll be back together tomorrow.